I'm Bridget Armstrong, sitting in for Tom Hall, and this is Midday. The Emmy nominations are in. Saturday Night Live and HBO's Westworld racked up 22 nominations apiece, while other popular newcomers like HBO's Insecure were left off the list. With so many high-quality options for viewers on traditional television and on streaming services like Netflix and Hulu, are we entering a golden age of television? Jamila Krimple is WYPR's digital producer. Rada Blank is a playwright, performer, and screenwriter who's written for Empire on Fox and Netflix's The Get Down. They join me to size up this year's TV hits and misses, plus your calls and emails about the small screen performances that captivate you. Midday gets underway right after these headlines.
Trump is innocent. How do we know? Because he told us so. Period. Okay, then he hired lawyers to agree with him. And they're going to prove it with a certified letter, which you know is the truth because it costs an extra $2 to have it certified. And I got a tracking number right here if you want to check it out. And it goes 855-46-11856. Son of a... Wait, wait, that's my bank routing number. No one used that.
A clip from Saturday Night Live. That's Melissa McCarthy's hilarious portrayal of White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer back in May. Saturday Night Live racked up 22 Emmy nominations this season. Welcome to Midday. I'm Bridget Armstrong, sitting in for Tom Hall. Today, we're talking about one of my favorite subjects, television. Last week, the Emmy nominations were announced. The awards show won't air until September, but in the meantime, we're going to dish about all the nominees and snubs, all the performances that moved us, and of course, the ones that made us want to turn the channel. My TV talking partner, Jamila Krimple, is here to help me do that.
Hey, Bridget.
Hey, she's a writer and WYPR's digital producer. Also joining us in the studio for the first time is Rada Blank. She's a playwright. She's a performer. She's a screenwriter. She's written for Empire on Fox and Netflix is The Get Down. Most recently, she worked as a writer and co-producer of Spike Lee's latest series, She's Gotta Have It, and that's going to premiere on Netflix on Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. So we're streaming live on Facebook. If you want to check us out, go to WYPR's Facebook page and weigh in. Of course, you can give us a call, 410-662-8780. Also email us at midday@wypr.org. So let's get into it, ladies. As I said, SNL topped the list with the most nominations. They had 22 nominations along with Westworld. That's an HBO show. I think one of the big things about SNL this season, and their ratings also bear that out, I think their ratings were up like 30% from the last season, is all the political commentary they did. They had a lot of material. Mm-hmm. And what do y'all think about that?
Well, you know, out of travesty, out of adversity. I think a lot of writers will say that adversity inspires, and we are going through some adverse times. I mean, Trump makes for an awesome subject or target, depending on what your point of view is. And I just feel like for SNL, was Melissa McCarthy nominated?
She was.
She better have been because that was a genius performance. But I mean, our administration gives SNL like a lot to pull from, you know what I mean? So greatly deserved by everybody on those teams.
And you mentioned Melissa McCarthy's performance. Of course, she played Sean Spicer. Alec Baldwin playing Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. He's got a lot of hilarious reviews for that. It's not just been the portrayals. We've also seen some of the hosts come on and address political issues.
Absolutely.
Dave Chappelle hosted.
Sure.
And we have a clip of Dave Chappelle's speech from that.
When Roosevelt was president, he had a black guy over and got so much flack from the media that he literally said, I will never have a in this house again. I thought about that and I looked at that room and I saw all those black faces in Bradley and I saw and I saw how happy everybody was. These people who had been historically disenfranchised, and it made me feel hopeful and it made me feel proud to be an American. And it made me very happy about the prospects of our country. So, in that spirit, I'm wishing Donald Trump luck. And I'm going to give him a chance. And we, the historically disenfranchised, demand that he give us one too. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Of course, Dave Chappelle coming back later and saying the only thing he regrets is saying give Trump a chance. Right. But Jamila, you had some thoughts about that episode, that speech about Saturday Night Live this past season in general. Talk to us about
that. Yeah. So just to set up, just in case anyone had not heard heard his monologue and wondered who the Bradley was that he was talking about. He was talking about actor Bradley Cooper. Dave got these thoughts from being at BET through this awards, not an award ceremony, more like a performance, a night of honor for the Obamas, star-studded performances, all that. And after the party, they some of the people who were there in the audience, celebrities, went back to the West Wing and had this little after party. And Dave says that he was in the room with all of these celebrities, and it was pretty much all black celebrities except for actor Bradley Cooper. And he's like, I don't know why Bradley was there, but nonetheless, he was there. And he scans the room and sees all of these pictures of white presidents and then Barack Obama. And he says that it reminded him, I guess, that we're going to be okay. Black people have this resiliency. We can get through this. And he was thinking about how far we've come and how this might be unfortunate for the country, some people may say that, but we can get through it. So a lot of people did not like sort of that, well, we've gotten through slavery, we've gotten through Jim Crow, we'll get through this too. People didn't like that idea. He was sort of saying, he said, give Trump a chance. It was like, give peace a chance, let's all get along.
And he's since retracted that statement.
Yes, he has.
I think less than 100 days after, since Trump has been in office. I mean, you know what? Dave Chappelle is a very smart man, but he's also an entertainer and a comedian. Mm-hmm. And I think we should maybe not put so much pressure on performers and entertainers to kind of give us solutions to our modern day problems around politics. Yes, he should express his opinions, but, you know, he also said some things that upset people from the trans community in one of his Netflix, so we shouldn't give a performer too much weight. But at the same time, it creates this awesome platform for people to critique through the lens of comedy, like all of these different things that are happening in our world. So I think it's smart that he took the opportunity to express his feelings and that SNL continues to challenge, you know, what mainstream media reports and what our political cabinet is doing and saying in the world. You know?
Sure. Yeah. And it's interesting that you brought up Dave Chappelle's Netflix specials, because he offended a lot of people. And a lot of those jokes, though, were the types of jokes he was telling 5 years ago, 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. But our social climate has changed so much. Mm-hmm. And so the things that we let fly, we used to let fly, we don't anymore. Things that seemed funny before, they don't. And also our understanding of each other and each other's situation has changed. Mm-hmm. Particularly, he angered folks in the trans community. And those were things that people were ignorant about or just didn't care 10 years ago when he would say something like that. And it's just, it doesn't go like that anymore. And in that, I think about a lot of shows that were popular a few years ago that because of politics now, because of our social climate, because so many people feel disenfranchised, they're just not funny or moving. Mm-hmm. House of Cards in that way is like that for me, because the Frank Underwood character is so treacherous and you don't know what he's going to do next. Well, you know, real politics, you don't know what's going to happen next there.
Scary. I spent a little too much time looking at this clip on Facebook about how Back to the Future predicted 9/11, right? But my goodness, the writers of House of Cards, I don't know if Miss Cleo's spirit has, I don't know what's going on in that writing room, but for them to be so spot on with the depiction of this kind of rogue president and watching the show and seeing things that unfolded just a few weeks prior with our president, it's kind of spooky how on point the writing is and connected to what's happening now.
And I wonder, you as a writer, someone who writes for television, when we're going through these times where people are feeling uneasy or happy, depending on where your politics lies, Where do you all go to draw inspiration? Do you think, do you want to reflect kind of what's happening in politics and our social climate? Do you want to give people an escape and have something going on that they're not even thinking about or living? Where do you come to it?
Well, you know, just in terms of my choice in places that I want to work and collaborate with other writers and creatives, like I feel like there's enough escape on TV. And so I always want to be a part of a team of writers and creators who are, you know, who have a finger on the pulse and aren't afraid to use this invented world to speak to some very truthful things. Even on Empire, which, you know, some people see it as a soap, you know, the writers in that room, we felt obligated to address issues around racial profiling and, you know, young Black men who like the characters, may have touched on a certain level of success, but still get pulled over by officers, you know, in the street. And so for me, I think what draws me to certain shows is their willingness to put a mirror up to the real world and reflect real issues through their characters. Yeah.
And that's Rhoda Blank. She's a screenwriter and performer. She's joining us to talk about TV Talk. TV also with us is Jamila Krimple. She's a WYPR's digital producer. We were talking about escapism, some shows that offer escapism, unlike some of the ones we were just talking about. Westworld is one of those. It's HBO show. It does deal with some social issues and kind of where we're headed in technology and how we treat one another.
Yeah.
But it is premised around this sort of fantasy land. It, too, got 22 nominations.
Wow.
HBO topped the list with the most nominations on that network, 111 nominations. But one of the shows that was not on that list is Insecure.
Mm-hmm.
That's a show we've talked about on this show before.
We could talk about it for hours.
We could talk about it forever. Rhoda, I know you're a fan. For me, I scanned the list 3 or 4 times. I said, I must have missed something,
right?
Because surely.
But you know what? I think it's important, in my opinion, to like put Emmys in a particular context.
Okay.
Like, what do they mean to a creator? What do they mean to an audience? What do they mean to a studio? And, you know, I'm not surprised that Insecure isn't on the show, isn't on that list. But I'm also not expecting it to be on the list, because I feel like with the Emmys, truthfully, I think they can mark for a writer, creator, a performer, you know, crossing a threshold or having a certain level of success, a pinnacle of success, which can then turn into, you know, a better pay grade and more opportunities and a larger audience. But just in terms of it being an affirmation or a confirmation of good work, I think we run into a mistake if that's what we're looking for that to represent. Because there are plenty of people who should have been on that list for years. I mean, it's kind of like the Susan Lucci effect. Like, there are plenty of actors who, you know, before the last couple of years where we came up with hashtags like Oscar So White, or I think there was an Emmy So White at one year. I'm not exactly sure. I sometimes wonder if the amount of diversity is about a response to the backlash. You know, like, are we now, are people, do the Emmy voters feel like, okay, well, this will satisfy those detractors, and then the Emmys goes back to the same old, you know? I feel like regardless of whether or not it shows up on that list, the numbers don't lie. Like, Issa Rae, Melina, all the people who have helped create that show, it's a hit. It's a hit in the circles that I run in. Mm-hmm. And that's really all that matters. You know, it's like whether or not people are tuning in. So I do think that the Emmys can be like a really important catalyst for certain performers, but we can't look at it as like the end all be all, you know, or the mark of true craftsmanship.
Sure.
Because if we wait on that, we might be waiting forever.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. And one of the things me and Jamila have talked about with Insecure, and one of the things I think a lot of the fans like, is that you feel like it could be real life. You feel like the characters are dealing with situations that you may be dealing with.
Sure.
The main character, Issa, is working in a organization where she's the only person of color, but they're working predominantly with students of color.
Yes.
So she's navigating that. Jamila, weigh in on that, how people are able to kind of identify and see their real life through that show. I mean, there's also relationship stuff, too.
Right,
it's not
right.
all, you know, workplace drama.
Yeah, I think, because so much of it is focused, this is a normal person. She's got a job where she probably doesn't make a lot. She's going to work. She's in a normal relationship. Like, there's no there's no flash in it. You know what I'm saying? Like, a lot of people can identify with her and her friends, even if they're not like her friends. But it's really important. Like, the first time I watched, I think, the first two episodes, I cried and cheered and laughed because I felt like this was an experience that I could identify with. But I also was just amazed by who was on that show. There's these beautiful actors of color, but you don't often see, just to speak to their color, you don't often see people who are of a medium or darker hue. So many people like that on a show together, and women who are glamorous and beautiful.
Yeah, and desired.
Yes,
this
absolutely.
Woman was desired by two men and other possible suitors. So I think that is important to show, like, a complex sexual black character who is not demonized or, you know, and then amongst her friends, you know, amongst the four women who were friends, each woman different from the next in terms of what they wanted. And so that kind of representation, I think, is really important. That's why I think the show is a win no matter what, because we are seeing ourselves in that light. And, you know, I think the thing now is, now that Hollywood has seen it as a success, you know, are they going to try to replicate that and do an Insecure 2? You know, because I'm just being honest, going into writing rooms, the two shows that they bring up to me now are Insecure and Atlanta. Well, we want something like Atlanta, which I'm sure Donald had his share of challenges trying to get that show on the air. But once the industry sees it as a success, they want to replicate that. They want an Empire spinoff, or they want a show just like Empire. I think what it all goes to say is, like, more studios need to take more risks on our storytelling. We're out there. We're watching. Mm-hmm. We're hungry for it. Like, even for shows that maybe is not your favorite or not your thing, there are large numbers because people of color see themselves. Those you shows. Know what I mean?
And it's interesting that you know, you talked about kind of their path, and it made Donald Glover forever to get Atlanta on, with Issa Rae as well. I mean, she started off with web series and kind of a non-traditional, I guess, way and approach to television. And there are a lot of young black people that have followed in those footsteps. I mean, she started with Misadventures of Awkward Black Girl,
right?
But there are other, there's Black and Sexy TV, there are other networks where you have young people starting their own shows. And I wonder if we'll begin to see more of those shows adapted, or more of those actors and producers being brought to the small screen, or even, you know, the big screen.
Well, absolutely. I mean, even in terms of She's Gotta Have It, it's on a digital format on Netflix. You know, like, Netflix and digital programs, like, or digital houses like Hulu and Amazon are becoming a hub because of all the success that these DIY web series have had. You know, I think that these networks are smart to capitalize off of how people watch TV now. You might watch a show during your lunch break at your desk. And so the larger studios are kind of meeting that demand. You know what I mean?
Rhoda Blank is a playwright, performer, and screenwriter. Jamila Crimble is WYPR's digital producer. We'll have more with them when we return. And, of course, your calls and emails. Give us a call at 410-662-8780 or email us at midday@wypr.org.
This is Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR, where you're listening to Midday.
Something don't taste right, cause it ain't right. Like when you take a sip of water and it turns out to be Sprite. I know your secret, and now I regret ever having you out your closet. Is this what I deserve? I took you at your word. You know I'm not too feminine to cut me up a nerd. What's worse, being heartbroken or roach bit? Heartbroken or roach bit? Or like seeing you in your outfit. I gave you that outfit, I'd rather be roach bit. Hell no, I ain't playing with your Michael. I'm not fooling with your Michael. For real,
that's the fabulous Titus Andromedon of Netflix Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. He's singing his version of Beyonce's Hold Up. Fun fact, the actor who plays Titus, Titus Burgess, got his start on Broadway in the musical Good Vibrations, so he has a singing background.
Absolutely.
He is absolutely hilarious
He's
on that
amazing.
Show.
Yes.
If you are just joining us, I'm Bridget Armstrong filling in for Tom Hall. We're talking TV today. I'm joined by Rada Blank. She's a playwright, performer, and screenwriter who's written for Empire and The Get Down. Most recently, she worked as a writer and co-producer on Spike Lee's latest series, She's Gotta Have It, that premieres on Netflix this Thanksgiving. Also with me here in studio is my TV talking partner, Jamila Krimple. She's a writer and WYPR's digital producer. Now, Jamila, I know you are a big fan of Titus.
Huge fan.
He really steals that show.
Absolutely. It's the Unbreakable Titus show.
Yes.
Yes, it is.
Sorry.
This, I refer to this season, the third season, if I'm not mistaken, is the season of Titus. Kimmy really plays second fiddle to him. I feel like her storyline was not as developed as his. I feel like Titus got the better laugh lines. And I know because I keep a running list of the jokes in the show. And it's like overwhelmingly, well, I guess that's a person to person, but I just feel like they put so much of an emphasis on him and understanding him as a character and his growth. And in the last episode of this season, something very funny happens. I won't give it away. But he's coming out of, I guess it's the Hudson River. And he says, I feel like this is the culmination of a personal journey. And this season kind of was for him. And we don't see, you know, Kimmy made some strides. She developed a little bit. But I feel like her storyline was kind of flat. And I just prefer Titus as a character.
But can I tell you something? Basically, like when you're working in TV, you'll have a Titus in your midst, mm-hmm. and you have to just sit on it because the show is called The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt.
Right.
Trust that those producers knew that a time would come where Titus would have his day because as a performer, I mean, you can't take your eyes off of him. Mm-hmm. He's engaging. He's funny. He's heartfelt. You know, to be a black gay man in prime time and still be like so human and so three and four dimensional, you know, and still crack us up. It's his moment. It's his time. And I'm sure Titus is going to get a spinoff because
Let's
if Netflix
so.
Is smart, you know what I mean?
He's already got his own wine. So why
yes,
not do
exactly.
a TV show?
Cheers to you, Titus.
Yes. I checked it out. It's a little too expensive for my taste. But
too high price for you.
Yeah.
Another popular show. I got a lot of nominations also on Netflix. Aziz Ansari's Master of None.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
A show I really enjoyed. We have a clip of that. In this clip, Angela Bassett guest starred on this episode. And
absolutely.
Favorite episode for a
yes.
lot of people. Let's hear that clip.
I don't want life to be hard for you. It is hard enough being a black woman in this world. Now you want to add something else to that.
It's not like this was my choice. It's just who I am.
Oh, who else you done told?
Just dead.
Yeah, of course. You know, you can't tell your grandmother.
Why?
Because she won't be able to handle this. And you know how forgetful she is. You're going to have to come out to her every other week.
All right, so I'm going to talk about...
Oh, all right. Rada, Lena Waithe is on one of the she's a cast member, regular cast member. She plays Denise on that show. She's Aziz Ansari's good friend. They grew up together. And in this episode, we see that dynamic. Aziz basically spends every Thanksgiving with her and her family. And Rada, you know Lena.
Lena's my play cousin.
Okay.
You know, as a black writer in Hollywood, you just make family with other, you know, writers of color, women especially. And she was someone who just immediately took me under her wing and was very supportive and loving. And I was just so happy to see her have a moment in that show, which is based on her very true coming out story. And I just thought how brave of her to use her own experience to speak to, you know, what it's like for a young black girl to come out in a traditional or more conservative, you know, black family. And, you know, but I think that time and time again, when shows touch on issues and touch on, you know, it go to personal places and sometimes very dark places, it's a win for the audience because we want to see something that feels real to us, you know, amidst all the escapism. We want to maybe see somebody who we can be inspired and encouraged by. So shout out to Lena and congrats on your Emmy nomination. That was a big deal for the people in her community and the writers that she's, you know, associated with. Mm-hmm. So very proud of her.
And one of the things Aziz Ansari is very very good at is centering other people's stories. We've seen that on this season, yeah. especially. Mm-hmm. We have mm-hmm. this episode, and there's also an episode that kind of follows different people's lives yeah. in New York.
Sure.
And I think it's called I Love You, New York. It was, mm-hmm. was the type, the name of it. And it, Aziz isn't really in that episode at all.
Right.
I think he and Donald Glover are very smart creators. They know that, like, all the power and richness that comes from collaboration and sometimes putting the spotlight on somebody else. You know, like, Donald has, like, 5-star generals in his cast, you know, and so does Aziz. And so they're smart to kind of say, well, let's focus on this person and let them shine. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I mean, I feel like Donald has done it as well, where you've gone a whole episode or two without seeing his face. And that's someone who trusts the writing, trusts his performance, trusts his performers, and has enough courage to say, I can step back and it still be a relevant and strong and engaging story. So, yeah.
And about that episode, there were so many things that struck me without knowing that the actress who plays Denise, who we heard Angela and Denise in the clip, without knowing that she wrote that episode, I felt like this feels so real and mm-hmm. so personal. And then to find out that she did write the episode, and I shouldn't say that he allowed her, but he could have easily, him and his writing partner, I think his name is Alan, mm-hmm. could have said, okay, we've heard your experience, we'll write this episode. But they said, no, we want you to write your own story. And I feel like you can tell in that episode. And it's so, another thing about that episode that struck me is that it's so, I feel like it's rare to see on television two minorities of two different ethnicities, two different races, having a friendship. It's either like, oh, I'm white and I have a black friend, or I'm black and I have a mm-hmm. white friend. But to see an Indian boy, and we see them, you know, from the ages of probably about 10, and a black girl have this close friendship, and to see him adopted into the family and spending Thanksgiving with them, that was just such a special, unique thing to
and
see on television.
It's, you know, that's why it's so important that more of us are creating the stories. Mm. And I'm sure Aziz, as a person who's come up through stand-up comedy and been on different shows like Parks and Rec and other shows, he may have been in those writing rooms or looked at the stuff that, you know, has come down the pike for his particular character and probably made a mental note. When I get in this position and I have the power to create some change, I'm going to empower the actors, the characters, the writers in my room. And mm-hmm. so, you know, is there pressure when you become a creator of color and you're working in these mediums? Sure, there is. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, like, we have the opportunity to give flesh and bone to characters that often come on screen and just say a sassy line or are the all-knowing black friend, you know, giving them some depth.
Yeah,
so, yeah.
Rada Blank is a playwright, performer, and screenwriter. Most recently, she's worked as a writer and co-producer on Spike Lee's latest series, She's Gotta Have It, that premieres on Netflix this Thanksgiving. Jamila Crumble is WYPR's digital producer. They're joining me to talk TV. And we'll talk about the show that we keep bringing up, Atlanta, which is a big favorite for a lot of people. We also have a clip. This is one of my favorite clips of the show. When we talked about Atlanta back, I think, in December, when the show was still we were still in the season, I think. Mm-hmm. We played this clip and the season went through and I still, you know, I have episodes that jumped out that I still like, but this is still one of the funniest moments. So let's hear that clip.
I should have just went home, but instead I'm in here locked up because of the food I ain't seen about 11 years, man. Why was that 5 points about to kiss the bus, feel me? And this ain't seen 11 years come up and talk to my man, listen, hey, boy, I ain't seen you about 11 years, boy, let's hang out. They go get a beer. So I follow him to the goddamn gas station. We get 2 beers, ain't get but 2 of them, but they with the big ones, though. They with the big ones. You know, anyway, so like, man, come on, let's go to the house and drink them. So we get to the house, like, man, my old lady here, so we just gonna drink them on the porch. Feel me? I'm like, boy, APD be rolling through here, boy. He done talked me into it, so sure enough, APD done roll up and seen the goddamn 2 cans out there, light me up for a pup intoxication. You know what I'm talking about?
And that episode, and just to give a little background on that, Earn, who's played by, he's the main character, that's Donald Glover's character, is his cousin Paperboy's manager. He's a rapper. And in this,
shout out to Brian Henry,
who's an excellent actor, who's nominated not for I think he's not nominated for Atlanta. Atlanta itself is nominated, but he himself is nominated for his guest appearance on This Is Us, which we'll talk about This Is Us and that episode and everything because that was just great. But on this particular episode, we see that Earn is in jail, and his paper boy has gotten out, and in this episode, it's funny, but it also puts this microscope on the criminal justice system and what it's like to be kind of put in this in a jail system.
This episode puts a microscope on several things. It puts a microscope on mental health issues. It puts a microscope on mass incarceration of Black men, the disparity in racial in sentencing. It puts a microscope on the taboo of Black male sexuality. This episode should win a damn Peabody Award. Mm-hmm. Like, I've never in 30 minutes of television been so riveted. You know, I think I watched this episode 3 times in a row because when the show first came on, it would come on in its regular time slot and then FX would run it again and again. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure there were other shows that were playing at the same time. I could not stop watching this episode. It's just dynamic, you know?
Yeah, I agree. I don't think I have anything else to say, but this is a great episode, a great season. And I think Donald Glover also got a nod for directing, I believe.
Yes, I think
and
so.
The show is beautifully shot and just speaks to the, I guess, the production values, like the money that studios and production companies networks are willing to spend on new series. It's great.
And you talked about the episode you watched over and over again. I watched the episode where Paperboy was on the fake news show on like the fake.
Sure.
I think it was the Black News Network. It was a fake name for a network, but the entire show was produced down to the commercials. There were fake commercials to go with this show. Mm-hmm. And I will admit, the first time I was like, wait, is this the real show? Like, I mean, it took me a while. I'm like, okay, this is all a part of the production. So I went back and watched that. But it speaks to, and in that episode, that's one of the ones where you don't see Donald Glover's character Earn. He gets out of the way and allows the character of Paperboy to kind of have this moment. And for him, it's a lot of him explaining about identity, his thoughts. And so we see that development in that character. And I just love that episode. And I think it really speaks to the production. While we are talking about it, let's get to This Is Us. Jamila, I know you're not a big fan.
I can't say I'm a fan or not because
I haven't
actually seen it. I feel like I know how addictive it is. I've heard people say, you know, how emotional it is. And there's lots of episodes of Law & Order SVU out there for me to watch. So I take a pause.
Can I just say something? If anything, for the performances of Ron Cephas Jones, mm-hmm. Sterling K. Brown, Brian Henry, just first of all, these are Black theater actors.
Mm-hmm.
And they bring their A-game, you know, to primetime television in a way that I haven't seen in a very, very long time. So if you can, just watch some of their performances. Okay. I think you'll be like riveted because it's just such powerful storytelling. And so happy for Brian that he, in one season, got to show so much range from playing a paperboy to then playing Ron Cephas Jones's
cousin. They were cousins. Mm-hmm.
You know, where he was a young man and then aged about 30, 40 years or something like that. Like, you know, for a Black actor to get that opportunity to show that kind of range in one season of television, I'm just over the moon for him and Sterling, who I believe became friends when doing a Terrell McCraney play mm-hmm. called The Brother's Size off Broadway many, many years ago. But it's just like an awesome time that a show like This Is Us will not only, you know, get into the life of the third and Black triplet of this family, but to then understand the history of his father, like to go back in the lineage of this character. It's like it is a special moment in television and in storytelling. I just was kind of blown away by it.
And all those, and we were talking about Emmys before, and you know, being able to appreciate these performances without an Emmy nomination or anything, but
yes.
All three of these men were nominated for Emmys. They are being recognized on both ends. Rada Blank is a playwright, performer, and screenwriter. Jamila Crimple is WYPR's digital producer. We're going to talk a little bit more about TV when we return. Of course, you can join the conversation. The number is 410-662-8780. You can email us at midday@wypr.org. More when we return. Stay with us.
This is Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.
Welcome back to Midday. I'm Bridget Armstrong, sitting in for Tom Hall. If you're just joining us, we're talking about the TV hits and misses of the season. I'm joined in the studio by Rada Blank. She's a playwright, performer, and screenwriter who's written for Empire and The Get Down. Also in the studio is my TV talking partner, Jamila Krimple. She's WYPR's digital producer. Of course, we want to hear from you. What shows are you watching? Which ones do you never want to see again? And what are you looking forward to in the fall? Give us a call at 410-662-8780 or email us at midday@wypr.org. All right, Jamila, you have a show you never want to see again. Well, or I shouldn't say, we can't characterize it like that, but you were a little disappointed. This is
I was.
Better Things.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
This was the first season, its premiere season on FX. It stars Pamela Adlon.
Who's nominated
for Emmy, Outstanding Lead Actress in a comedy series. People might remember a voice that she did, Bobby Hill on King of the Hill. It was a Fox animated series.
I guess
from 10 years ago or something.
Maybe.
Like
I think reruns, syndications.
Yeah,
gone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She voiced a boy character from Texas. She's very, very talented. She's a comedian. She's a writer. She's a producer. She's worked with Louis C.K. So that's why I was rooting for, not because she's worked with Louis C.K., because she's a female writer and producer. And the show was good. It had some good episodes, but I just felt like something was missing. Something was off. And it's gotten so much critical acclaim. And Rod, I don't know if you've seen it, if you can speak to what. Give your own opinion.
I have seen it. My opinion is, I think, you know, Louis C.K., his show, it took a second for him to find his groove.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we need to give her that chance as well. Like, it's just hard when, you know, it's a woman of a certain age as the lead in a series. And she's playing a single mother who is a struggling actress. And, you know, the premise alone is interesting to me. And I've seen a couple of episodes that I've enjoyed. I think we need to give her a chance to grow into, you know, what that character is. Because I believe she's like writing and in front of the camera.
Right.
And as someone who's doing that in my own project, it's not easy. And so I feel like we should give her a chance to kind of grow into her voice. Can I say something I don't ever want to see again?
Sure.
I don't ever want to see an ensemble comedy where there are five white people and one black guy.
Mm.
I've seen it a lot. Mm. And, you know, it's always what's so suspect to me is that the black guy is like a black guy from like Chicago or Brooklyn.
Right.
And he talks like this. And he's like, I don't know, Greg. I don't know, Samantha. I'm just like, who is that? Who is this man who only hangs with white people, but is like so black and so woke?
What is this show?
There are several shows.
Okay.
That fit this criteria. Some comedies on NBC and stuff I've seen where there's just that one black character and the rest of the cast is white, but it's the blackest person that I've ever seen on TV. I just don't think this person exists.
And
you know?
I think that sometimes speaks to who's in the writer's room.
Well, exactly. But you know what
that.
I think this season, these last few seasons of television do is they force those creators to take it up another notch. Because shows where there are more than one black person, more than one person of color in the cast, in the ensemble, are proving to be very successful. We're going to then be looking at you like, what are you doing? You know, with your one token black character. So that's what I kind of don't want to see anymore.
Right. Can I have, speaking of one black character, which is, I think, better than Better Things, Stranger Things,
yes.
hashtag poor Barb, or now the hashtag is justice for Barb. The character who played Barb, her name is Shannon Purser, if I'm pronouncing it correctly. She was in only in four episodes of this first season of Stranger Things, which comes back in October. But she got a nomination for guest actress, and I thought it was funny. I went back and watched the episode again that she was nominated for, and she was only in this one episode for the first 2 minutes. And I thought, this seems kind of just to appease the fans
response.
Because she was a fan favorite. But I was like, you could have picked a better episode. But so she's, you know, 20 years old. This was her first acting gig. I think she did a good job. But as we were saying, you know, there's spaces that could have been taken for someone else. But I'll give Barb her due.
And that does speak to that question we brought up earlier about, you know, when we hear the nominations and when you have something like Oscar So White, and if there was an Emmy So White, if some of these nominations are a response to appease people, and with race, with identity, and even with a hashtag. Everybody just liked Barb, and she died early in the season. So I wonder about that, too. We're going to take a call from Nathan in Hartford County. Nathan, you have a comment about The Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah, I think the show is oddly claustrophobic, but it's—I don't know—I think the season sort of moves sort of slow, but the way it builds towards the end of that season, it's just such a well-written and almost—I wouldn't say prophetic because it's outlandish, but oddly prophetic about the way our society currently is and where we can end up quickly.
Thank you, Nathan. And Handmaid's Tale is one of the shows that I've watched, and it was one of those things that's getting a lot of sort of political comparisons because people are saying, could we end up there, those who are not in agreement with our administration?
Well, I mean, we have this Muslim ban that our current administration is still trying to put into effect. So when I saw that episode where, you know, I'm forgetting the actor's name, and I apologize, she's dynamic as the lead in the show, where her and Samara Wiley were in the restaurant and they couldn't use their credit card because all women no longer had access to...
And that actress Elizabeth Moss.
You know, they no longer had access to funds, their own money. I said, you know, like... We are adjacent in terms of the issues around, you know, how we profile and try to control a group of people. But yeah, I agree with Nathan that it's like some of the smartest writing. It's another show where I felt like this about Westworld. You just got to give it a chance to find its legs. And once it does, you cannot turn away, you know?
And with that show, with The Handmaid's Tale, they did have to do some interesting things to address race and ethnicity as well, because the book, Margaret Atwood's book, does not include black characters, because in that imagined world, black people have been sent off to kind of live in work camps, live separately in a form of slavery, but live separately from these main characters. But you mentioned Samira Wiley, who we've seen on Orange is the New Black. She plays a character who is there with Elizabeth Moss, and she's in the action. And I thought that was interesting. The producers and writers taking that liberty, and of course they had to get Margaret Atwood's permission, taking that liberty to bring in these black characters. I couldn't help but compare this, and I know I'm not the first person to compare it, to Parable of the Sour, Parable of the Talents, Octavia Butler's work, which is a similar work, but she positions people of color already in that story. She herself is a black woman, science fiction writer. And so she positions them in that story already and thinks, what would a, I guess, post-apocalyptic America look like given, you know, who we have living here?
Right.
And I think Handmaid's Tale tries to get there by putting in these characters of color. And I think it was a good call to make to make it reflect that.
But I think as much as, like, it's a great opportunity for Samira and, you know, other actors of color in that series, like, you know, maybe it is time for Octavia Butler's work. And I do think that there are some things on the horizon where there'll be dramatizations of her books that are about these, you know, post-apocalyptic communities and people trying to survive, and people from different, because it's post-apocalyptic, people from different ethnic groups having to come together because, you know, this is all that's left of humanity. And so, again, I think it's like this thing of, like, saluting or upholding the work that creates a platform, you know, through diversity, but also putting support behind projects like Octavia, where we are at the forefront, or a diverse characters at the forefront of the storytelling.
And talk about kind of foreshadowing. This isn't a books conversation, but I think in Parable of the Talents, the character who's running for president becomes a dictator. You know, I'm not making any comparisons, but that character's slogan is Make America Great Again. I can't make this up. She wrote this in the 80s. So, you know, just talk about comparisons. Now, we have a few minutes left, and we're going to talk about a few shows that will not be returning. And they're shows that we've actually talked about on this program and recommended as great shows. The first one is The Get Down, which is something you wrote for, rather. And we spoke a little bit about giving time to let shows breathe.
Sure.
And I'm wondering, with the shows like The Get Down and Underground, which was on WGN and is going off for, I guess, a different reason, I'm wondering, are we giving these shows enough time to breathe? And in our kind of streaming services, new shows, you know, every few weeks, does that timeline shorten? Do shows have to either, you know, hit a certain ratings thing or hit certain reviews
first?
Well,
the thing that both The Get Down and Underground have in common are that the casts are predominantly people of color.
Exactly.
So, I mean, you can't help but look at, you know, if The Get Down was about a bunch of, you know, Italian graffiti kids in the 70s, would it have, you know, would it have the same fate?
Right.
But, you know, in this day of digital age and, you know, being able to upload movies, you know, that have just come out, like, there is this, you know, this very high demand for content immediately and to hook an audience immediately. It's funny when I hear people say, oh, I don't know about Westworld. I don't know about Handmaid's Tale. And they've only watched two episodes. I mean, I'm a playwright, so at heart. So I'm into the slow burn. So I know, like, it may take a couple of episodes. And maybe that's the case with The Get Down. With Underground, I do think it's something different, where that show immediately pulled an audience in. And I remember watching the first episode maybe a year ago and talking with a friend of mine and just saying to myself, I'm not sure if I can watch a whole season of people, characters who are enslaved and fighting for their freedom. But I saw the first episode of the second season, and I had to go back and watch the first season because it is just absolutely compelling and riveting. And I wasn't sure if using modern music would work in a period piece, but it is some of the best television not on TV anymore. And so, like, you can't help but look at, you know, what the world of the characters are living in, and, you know, because it's about slavery and people aren't ready to face that reality. I'm not sure.
When with Underground, WGN, the cable network that produces that show was bought by Sinclair Media, well, in the Tribune Media buyout. And that's when they've decided to not continue production on that show. And you talked about watching these enslaved people fight for their freedom every episode in and out. But one of the things about this show just sort of going off abruptly is that you don't know if these people are going to be free. You don't know if their families
right.
are going to be reunited. And that's the hardest thing for me.
And one of the things that was smart about the show is, like, you actually, through these characters, you get to see the different effects that being enslaved has on them and what people are willing to do to survive and what does survival, what does freedom look like for each character on that show. I pray it finds a home, because it is really just Misha Green just... and her team, they just did an amazing job in, like, taking us back to this very dark time, but having very quiet, slow moments. Something I'm obsessed with, where people of color and women are concerned, is, like, moments of mundanity. And they actually have mundane moments with characters who are enslaved. And so there's a science to that, and I feel like it should be applauded, you know?
So many shows we didn't get to talk about. We meant to talk about Queen Sugar, which I know is a big favorite for us. We were running out of time. but before we go, I do want you to tell us a little bit about She's Gotta Have It. That's
sure.
the show you're working on now.
Yeah. I mean, it's just a full circle moment, because I was one of those kids growing up in Brooklyn who would pass by Spike's production office every day, like, just hoping, like, I could get a toe in the door. And to be able to work with him on a show based on his film from 30 years ago, I don't know if you've seen this film, mm-hmm. but at the time, the film She's Gotta Have It was, like, revolutionary, because you had this black female protagonist who was unapologetically sexual, and you saw her through the eyes of her lovers. And so what we've done is we've just taken that character and placed her in modern day Brooklyn, where the issues are not just about her sexuality, it's about gentrification, it's about an artist trying to find her voice. And when you say She's Gotta Have It, it's not just about sex, it's about freedom, it's about voice, it's about liberation, it's about, you know, artistic expression, you know. And I'm just really happy to have been a part of it.
Rhoda Blank is a playwright, performer, and screenwriter. She's written for Empire, The Get Down, and most recently, she worked as a writer and co-producer on Spike Lee's latest series, She's Gotta Have It. That's what she was just telling us about. That show premieres on Netflix this Thanksgiving. Jamila Krimple is my TV talking partner. She's a writer. She's WYPR's digital producer. We'll have more information about the shows we discuss and links on the web at wypr.org/midday. Coming up on the program tomorrow, it's our next installment of Living Questions. Guest host House, Midday senior producer Rob Sivak explores the growing population of nuns. That is, Americans, especially young Americans, who say they no longer identify with institutional religion. Alan Cooperman is the director of religion and research at the Pew Research Center. He joins Rob along with Joseph Wood of Emmanuel Episcopal Church here in Baltimore, Josh Sherman of Repair the World, and Terrell Williams of Build. Lunch today was provided by the Baltimore Chef Shop on the Avenue in Hampton, offering a variety of private events and cooking classes for kids and adults, including baking and international cuisines. This Sunday at 2:30, they're offering a regional Mexican cuisine class. More on the web at BaltimoreChefShop.com. All right, that's it for us today. Westmore's Future City is up next. I'm Bridget Armstrong, sitting in for Tom Hall. Have a great day.